Here, the old gods are dead.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hiya, before this episode starts, I would like to give a quick trigger warning. Me and Liam, at the end of this episode, have a discussion concerning slavery, and there is a brief mention of rape via statistics, so just a heads up for that. Hiya, I'm Rebecca with Liam.
Hi.
And this is the Creepy Wee Podcast, episode 2. Today we're going to be talking about the Gorbals Vampire. I just wanted to start off by saying thanks for everybody for listening to our first episode. We did actually manage to get to number 33 on the Spotify history chart, so thanks for that. Even though we had some bad technical issues, we're simply too hot and sexy to kind of help you work mics. So
sorry, I never learned that in school when I was being hot and fuckable.
But we've been sent some tips, so we'll hopefully be better this time. And I also want to say thanks to Emma Gray. She sent us a copy of her new book, Be Good to Your Mammy. I've not actually managed to give it to Liam for him to read because I've been too busy hogging it.
I know nothing about it.
But it is a really good book, and it was written in Scots, and it really shows the complexities of family dynamics. And one of the main characters actually has OCD, it's really good to read about that being part of her character. So you actually probably have seen this in Waterstones or any other bookshop. It's doing quite well at the moment, but I would definitely pick it up. So thanks, Emma, for that. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about the Gorbals Vampire. Kind of. It's a bit of a clickbait title because the Gorbals Vampire.
Yeah, not clickbait, but also clickbait.
It's not that long a story. So Liam's going to cover that because he is a native to Glasgow. Not a native, but he lives there.
Not a native. An immigrant, but from immigrant. So kind of counts.
So he's going to be talking about that. But before that, I'm going to talk about three other lower rent Scottish vampires. I'm going to be talking about the Bevanshee, the Glamis vampire, and the vampire in Melrose Abbey. So, right, Liam, did you know the first person to come up with the word Nosferatu or vampire was actually a Scottish author of Airdrie?
No. Okay, literally, what hasn't Scotland invented at this point? I will say this all day, every day. Where did we go wrong? We do nothing now.
Aye, we did fuck all. We got the check and bounce, but phones, Twilight, that was us. Our name was Emily Gerard, and she was Fae Airdrie, and her interest in Transylvanian folklore came from her husband, who was an Austro-Hungarian knight stationed in a small town in Transylvania. And our collection of Transylvanian myths and legends are known to have influenced, once again name dropping here, Bram Stoker, who went on to write Dracula in 1897. Hey. How many times is he going to appear in your episodes? Because that's 2 for 2.
We need to do his birth chart next.
Should we pause and quickly Google? No, leave it. Right, so my first vampire, the Bevanshee. The Bivenshi is a fairy-like vampire that usually appears as a beautiful young woman wearing a long green dress. What?
Me.
A long green dress that conceals her deer hooves that she has instead of feet. And as soon as I heard deer hooves, remember that gif that's on Tumblr? It's like the wee deer that takes off his hooves and then he's got like hands.
And it's got, and it like does the little thing with its fingers.
Yeah, that's as soon as I read that. So like other vampires, she drinks the blood of humans and will vanish with the rising sun. She may also take on the form of a Scotch crow or a raven. There's numerous stories about the Bivenshi, or with a general theme, hunters or farmers being attacked in the wilderness at night. Kind of gives me, I'm going to go into like a couple of iterations of this story, but it gives me big Tam O'Shanter vibes because these guys are kind of misbehaving.
Yeah.
And then will ultimately suffer for that.
The girlies are acting up.
Yeah. And then it's ultimately women that are their downfall. So in one story recorded by Scottish folklorist Donald Mackenzie, there were four men who were hunting and took shelter for the night in a lonely hut. One of the men supplied vocal music whilst the others were dancing. The men then expressed a desire for partners to dance with, and soon after that, four women then entered the hut. Four sexy ladies, by the sounds of it. Like Donald Mackenzie, like actually spends a wee while talking about how hot these women were. So I'm just gonna breeze out that, and we kind of get it. Like they're vampires, so three of them danced whilst the fourth sat beside the vocalist, and he, I don't know if he's like playing an instrument or something, but he starts to notice blood is falling off his companions, so he legs it basically, and as the Bivenshi that was like sat next to him starts to chase him, very much Tam O'Shanter.
That is like, this is literally the same plot. Like, I'm seeing a lot of similarities here. I'm not accusing anyone of plagiarism. I'm just saying.
Well, Robert Burns gets all his stuff with folklore, so I don't know who's copying who here. All right, so he manages to run and take refuge among the horses outside, and the vampire can't catch him, and she disappears when the sun comes up. At daylight, he goes back into the hut and he finds that inside these three pals have been like murdered and drained of their blood. A similar story is told by Catherine Briggs, another folklorist. She suggests that the Bivenshi wasn't able to catch the fourth man when he was among the horses because iron is actually a traditional weakness of fairies. That's actually, I googled this. I was like, is it actually a weakness? That's the reason why people used to, and some people still do, put horseshoes above their doors. It's an easy way, an easy source of iron. So they could use that to protect their homes from mischievous or malicious spirits. We will eventually do an episode on the fae and other Scottish fairies, like the whole like hierarchy of Scottish fairies, because there's loads and loads and loads. But I would maybe get it out of your head. There's a common misconception that fairies are like really nice and cute and hot and whatever, and Scottish fairies are arseholes. Like a majority of them are all really, like, they just
ball back.
Aye, genuinely just can't. In another story, I think this is also told by Catherine Briggs, the hunters took refuge in a cave for the night in Syria, like a sea cave kind of thing, maybe.
Yeah.
And each of them wished that his own sweetheart were there that night. But one of them, named McPhee, who was accompanied by a black dog, said that he would have preferred his wife to remain at home and for somebody else to accompany him.
Wait, I think I've heard this story before.
I think I've seen this one before. I've heard something like this. Like, maybe this might be a popular scary story. If anybody kens, if anybody recognises this being like some kind of folktale that sounds similar to this, like, please, like, email us at thecreepyweepodcast@gmail.com and let me ken how you've heard it, because this feels very familiar. So this guy says that he would have preferred if any random woman walked into that cave at that very moment, as long as it wasn't his wife. And then, at that moment, a group of young women enter the cave, and the men who had wished for their sweethearts were killed. And then McPhee was actually protected by his dog, who drove the women away from the cave. So,
okay. So men face no repercussions for being unfaithful, as usual. Yeah, no, this doesn't feel like a cautionary tale.
Yeah, well, I have the caution here. So one of the reoccurring themes in these stories is that the Boov and She appear almost immediately after the hunters express their desire for female companionship, obviously. This comes from a Scottish superstition that if you were to make a wish at night without also invoking God's protection, that the wish would then be granted in some terrible manner.
Oh.
We actually spoke about Tam O'Shanter like before we recorded our first episode. It's an unreleased pilot that nobody's probably ever going to hear. But is there no something in Tam O'Shanter where he says something in the pub and then like all hell breaks loose when he leaves because he's obviously he's like wished or desired something?
Yeah.
Well, Tam was bad anyway, that's ringing some kind of bells in me. I've got a book of Scottish superstitions. I might go through that and see if that's in it.
Yeah.
We're going to do a Scottish Superstitions episode at some point as well. We can do multiple ones of them because there's fucking hunters. But that's the Boov and She. So if you Google her, she's normally... It's that kind of weird Celtic, modern Celtic art that you see if you Google Scottish like mythology. And she kind of looks...
Oh, love. And it's all like grey and white and red and then like green, watercolour.
Green dress, ginger hair, big tits.
Waifu.
Emu. So my second vampire is the vampire of Glamis Castle, and I don't know if you've heard of Glamis Castle before. There's loads of stories surrounding this place. There's one, the monster of Glamis Castle, which we've all also did an episode on that at some point because this is on my list. I really like this story, but yeah. I didn't think that there's actually a spin on this story where it's a vampire instead of a monster. So there's two iterations or two main accounts of this vampire. The first is that of a vampire child that was born into the family residing in the castle. Further legends state that within each generation, a vampire is born into the family who like lives there. So I googled it. The family that has held the seat since the 14th century is the Lyon family. L-Y-O-N. Now Bowes Lyon. Do you recognise that name?
No.
So Bowes Lyon is the family of the Queen Mother, which would make for any conspiracy theorists out there who think the Queen's a fucking lizard. So the Queen Mother was born there and she grew up there. Princess Margaret was actually born there. So if we're gone by this legend, the Queen Mother could have been a vampire, Princess Margaret could have been a vampire, and Ur Liz could definitely be a vampire.
Ur Lizzie.
If you Google a picture of the Queen Mother and look at her teeth or her eyes, like it wouldn't be that hard. It wouldn't be that hard. It really would not be that hard to say that she was a vampire.
I mean...
And they do
kind of like Prince Philip tease, though. Like it was very Weekend at Bernie's situation towards the end. Like anyone could have looked like a vampire, and both
they look like Nosferatu kind of vampires. Though. No, this Boov and She kind of sexy. So, this legend has potential for the royal family actually being a clan of vampires. So, Stephanie Meyer, take notes. That could be one of the clans. So the second telling of the Glamis vampire is that of a servant woman who a few hundred years ago was found crouching over a body drinking the victim's blood. The penalty for this crime was that the servant was bricked up alive in a room within the castle wall. There's a few stories like this in relation to Glamis. Like I said, Glamis will definitely be a full episode one day, but there's always this thing with Glamis Castle that there's a room in there that's sealed. There's a story like in the 1900s they were trying to find out where the room was, so they covered all the windies in like bed sheets or something, like covered every single windy in the house that they could, and then stood outside and there was still like four sets of windies, like one room that they couldn't get to, and they couldn't explain where it was. So it's like in the walls. Aye, so either there's a monster in there or there's a vampire in there or Prince Andrew's in there.
Or treasure.
Aye, the Holy Grail. all the other stuff that the British royal family
all the other
stole.
Stuff that they robbed.
So my third vampire, this is a bit longer, this story, is the vampire in Melrose Abbey. It's near the Scottish borders, basically. So this is to do with, like, monks. This is, like, Scottish, like, 1600s, 1700s. It doesn't actually have a specific date, but I think it's a few hundred years ago. This is our exorcist, basically.
Okay, camp. Camp already. Camp by default.
The vampire in Melrose, this story tells you how a group of monks actually saved the town from a dark spectre that had been plaguing the population for some time. So, the vampire in Melrose, during his lifetime, was a chaplain to a lady who lived nearby in the town. The chaplain was actually, he was a bit of a groovy monk, and he was fond of all manners of sin and vice. And he was actually, when he was alive, he was nicknamed the Hunder Priest, meaning dog priest. I thought this might mean that he was that he might have been a werewolf or something like that, but I did more research and found out that it was a wide nickname that was given to him because his favourite thing to do was hunt with a pack of howling hounds behind him. Which was really inappropriate. So it was actually his colleagues that gave him that nickname. Like, they really didn't like him, and they called him the dog priest, and so did everybody in the town because they couldn't be arsed with him. But he did manage to maintain a professional relationship with a woman and was, like, her certified ordained chaplain. So,
yeah.
A fellow monk actually for the abbey said this of his reputation. Other things he also loved that made not for sanctity, and when at last he died, his death was no more holy than his selfish, sensual life had been. Bad to the bone. every time these, like, religious people try to, like, comment on somebody else being cool, it just makes them sound even better.
Like, how many people are we going to excuse on this podcast because they sound cool?
Literally, like, any bad behavior, I'm like, nah, let them do it.
We've all been there.
So the chaplain eventually dies. I'm assuming that he would die quite young if he was, I mean, like, priests and stuff are allowed to drink, but if he was big into sin, he was probably one of the alcoholic priests, I would guess. You get how you get different types. Some of them really like that wine, so he's probably one of them. He dies relatively young anyway. So when he died, it said that he paid the price for his sins, and that his soul couldn't find peace, and that his ghastly form stalked the streets at night in search of blood, terrifying the locals. It was said that he tried to enter Melrose Abbey in the dark of night in the form of a winged bat. And then, like, he couldn't get in, so it was kind of like, I don't know if it was, like, the holiness of the area or whatever that meant that he couldn't get in. But he would basically, like, imagine, like, a bat flying at a wall and then kind of bouncing off it. And then when he hits the ground, he's, like, back in his, like, vampiric form, like, lying on the ground. but it sounds like he's a zombie, basically. For the readings I went through, I don't know if this is, like, what all the depictions of vampires were like, where it's, like, in the first half of Dracula, where Dracula's, like, moving around really slowly and crawling up the walls and stuff like that, but he's not, like, he doesn't look young, he looks like total shit. He looks dead and stuff. It might be, like, that kind of old view of a vampire before, like, they were, like, super powerful and stuff like that. So he's kind of, like, roaming around, skulking about, looking really scary, like what you would think, like, Frankenstein's monster looked like, kind of, like, yellow skin, like, lips peeled back. You can see all his teeth and stuff. So when he was trying to, like, enter the abbey, the monks then started to, like, pray and, like, put rituals on, like, against him, and it was able to, like, drive him away for the abbey. So then, because he can't get into the abbey anymore, he continues to roam around the town at night, and he goes back to the woman who hired him, goes to her house and was like skulking around the grounds of her cottage. And it was reported by neighbours that they could see him. Like, it's actually like documented that there was like some kind of spectre like in her garden, like moaning and like banging on the windies and stuff like that. And she was screaming inside. And the kind of how she couldn't get out. Maybe she was so terrified that she just wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
Who's to say? Because I don't know what I would do in that situation.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'd probably lock the doors and then go like cry in a corner somewhere.
Shaking. Well, anytime somebody tries to run in a scary film, it doesn't really work out. Like, in the first 5 minutes of Scream, she tries to run. So. Anyway,
I don't think falling and I can't get
it. I don't think this woman actually ends up dying or anything. She seems to like get through this unscathed. There's no reports of her death. The monks are getting really tired of this. The people of the town are like, "You need to help us. Like, you have to like perform some kind of." I don't know if exorcisms were a thing in these times. They became really fucking popular in the 1800s, and then obviously in the
Bigger than the Beatles.
Aye, and then when The Exorcist came out, the Catholic Church really took that and ran with it. We're doing exorcisms constantly. So the people of the town are getting really pissed off, and the monks, they send a like senior monk out and then four other monks. So there's a group of five monks. They visit the dead chaplain's grave where they sat until night came, and then that night the vampire appeared like before them in his like actual scary vampire form, zombie form, like basically hovering above the ground as if he had just risen from the earth and like pushed the headstone like to the side. And then one of the monks began the Lord's Prayer and the chaplain retreated and went back into the earth. And then it was like nothing had even happened, like the earth hadn't been touched, the tombstone was back where it should have been. And all that for prayer, that's quite
That's powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Almost as if nothing had happened at all.
You're on the same thought as me. when I wrap up, you'll realise. So, kenning that they were dealing with a proper vampire, the monks waited until daybreak and then began to dig the grave up. Inside, they found the chaplain grinning with bloody lips. So they removed the body, drove a stake through its heart, I assume, burned it, and then spread the ashes across the Scottish borders. So, as much as I want this spooky, scary story to be true, it does very much remind me of The Exorcist, like, or any other horror film. Like, is it Insidious?
Every made-up story.
Yeah, is it Insidious?
Yeah.
The one, these films that are, like, actually funded by the Catholic Church, like, you can look that up. Like, they're actually, like, part of the propaganda machine.
The Conjuring.
The Conjuring, that's what I'm thinking of, The Conjuring.
Yeah.
So, like, the monks, the Melrose, probably made this up so that they could, one, deter people from sinning, and two, make the church look powerful as fuck and scare the locals into going to church and giving them money. That's what I think.
Yeah.
And know every single story that we do, I'm going to try and dispel stuff, because the Glamis Vampire and the Bouvinchie, I like the ones, and they might just be very explain the unexplainable, like... Ken, or just to scare people, like why these stories have been made up, but like this Melrose Abbey one stinks to high heavy religious propaganda.
Yeah.
Like it really does.
You know.
So
I actually have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you believe in vampires? Like, I love the ooky spooky and I believe in many things, but I don't see it for me. I don't see it. Like,
I think
I just feel like they're kind of like not a thing, you know?
I think, like, Bella Swan montage when she's Googling all the different cultures and all the different kinds of vampires and stuff, like, even, I don't know, because every single culture has a story about vampires.
Yeah.
And it's not just Transylvania and it's not just Celtic vampires and stuff like that. Like, there's stuff in South America, there's stuff in all the different countries and cultures
in
Africa.
Yeah, even just Indo-European, it's like...
Yeah.
Cross-continent.
That's like when like every culture around the world has a dragon, and different kinds of dragons as well, fire breathing dragons, air dragons, water dragons, like that sort of stuff. And like, how are we all coming up with these different but similar things? I don't know. I want them to be real. badly, because if there's any vampires out there, one. I want to be one. Email us at the creepy wee podcast. If you bite us, we can do this podcast forever. I do. I think in some level, this is me cancelling myself by saying that I think vampires are real, but I don't know. There's some stuff that I just want to be true, because there's so many different stories.
No, you've literally just convinced me, like, in 30 seconds of time, you've, like, got me from a non-believer to, like, fuck yeah, they exist, like...
My energy is unmatched. Managing to convince people into bullshit like this. No, I do. And I think fairies and stuff are real as well, so...
Oh, I think they're real.
Definitely.
I love a fairy.
Well, what did you just call me?
When you were like, Scottish fairies are arseholes, I was like, I mean, you didn't have to come for me like that, but okay. Interpol, I've seen them all, you know.
We're genuinely just doing this podcast for ourselves. Anyway,
yeah, so pretty much.
I'm going to do my sources for this one. So for the Boob and She, I actually went through Scottish Folklore and Folk Life by Donald Mackenzie, The Fairies in Tradition and Literature by Catherine Briggs, Wikipedia, of course. By the way, I donated to Wikipedia this week because when I went to do my research, it asked, and I was like, no, I'm actually doing this for a living now, so I better pay. So if you can donate, you can donate a minimum of £2 to Wikipedia. I think it's really important, to be honest, that knowledge should be free.
Yeah, it's such a good resource. Like, I don't know why schools tell you for, like, your whole life that they're not good. Like, literally, I got through my entire undergrad with Wikipedia and YouTube. Like, they are... so worth it.
When you go onto Wikipedia and you do research, it obviously has citations, and then you can get a more in-depth look to stuff. So when folk are like, did leave everything you read on Wikipedia, I'm like, no, do, because it's actually cited. Like, obviously people can go in and change stuff, but there's moderators on Wikipedia that work really hard. Anyway, donate. And then the...
Wikipedia sponsor us, please.
Please sponsor us. They sent me a really nice thank you email. Maybe I should respond. And the rest of my stuff came, the glamorous vampire stuff came through the Prince Michael Chronicles. I believe that's some kind of like royal family website. Anyway, so we'll take a wee break, and then Liam will come back and talk about the Gorbals vampire. So, Liam, tell me about the Gorbals vampire, because I know nothing.
So, the Gorbals vampire, as the name would imply, is a vampire native to the Glasgow Gorbals. So, I'll just...
Wow.
So I'll just
journalism.
Yeah, I'm not a journalist, I'm just pretty. But, so, the Gorbals are a residential neighbourhood in the south side of Glasgow, with like a really rich history of like having like a strong sense of community, and they just grew rapidly like throughout the 19th and 20th century, with an influx of like immigrants from like Ireland and mainland Europe who came to work in like all of the like Scottish like labor industries. Like we really have a
shit
lot of those
stuff. Steel yards,
yeah.
Is this all exactly. This is like tenements and stuff. Like they threw up tenements like really fast for these people.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not great living conditions.
Yeah, so the tenements in the 20th century, that's what I'm gonna get into. Mm-hmm. They got to a point of crowding where it was like a whole like could be like 6-person family would be in like one room, and like from what's left of these sort of like tenement style flats, like there's not a lot of tenements left because a lot of them got replaced. With like high rises, mm-hmm. But like they aren't huge. Like they're like tall rooms, but they're not huge.
Yeah. You just kind of like, stank so it, was, like literally yeah, stank that, shit. Like these places yeah. were like diseased, like cholera type yeah. of way. The rest.
Yeah. So and that wasn't really the fault of the people, like emigrating to there or whatever, like the people living there, like that was the fault of the landlords who were kept unchecked for decades.
For decades? Try centuries, baby.
Centuries. I mean, still to this day, like if you go to like any student flat, you're like, why are there exposed cables everywhere? Like, it's just like, do we need landlords? Should we get rid of them? Discuss. It's not a discussion. The answer is no, we don't really need them. And yes, get rid of them. But that's a story for like someone else's podcast, I guess. But due to like the crowded communal nature of these like communities, like any rumor that went around would spread like wildfire. So you can imagine that kids hearing about some sort of vampire would just escalate to a point of insanity very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 1950s, a rumor spread that two neighborhood boys had been killed by a vampire.
Did anyone actually die?
No. No one died. No one died at Stonewall.
This is camp.
Yeah, no one died. It was like there's no records of two boys dying around this time.
Does this kind of thing used to happen like when I was wee? Like I lived in like a kind of like rougher area, and like the amount of shit that we just made up and like fully believed. Like even the person who was making it up was like in. We were in deep with all the crap that we made up.
Yeah.
And we'd literally scare ourselves shitless.
No, there was literally a boy in my primary school that on the playground was like, I'm a vampire. And everyone was like, oh my God, bite me. Like, we were like 6 years old. I was like, no.
There was a lassie at my high school who like, told everybody she was a vampire and she like fully believed it. And good for her. I still see her every now and again. And I'm like, remember when she told everybody she was a vampire? Believe women.
What if she is? Genuinely,
like, she believed it that hard that, like, I was kind of like, well, I'm not going to argue. Like, it might be.
When you went into the, like, biology classroom, did she, like, cover her mouth and, like, move uncomfortably? Like,
yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, character energy. She was on their Bella Swan shit. It was, like, she was nice, though. She was really, really nice. And I was like, if she is really a vampire, yous are all getting bit and killed, and I'm maybe going to join her clan. So,
yeah. No, it's always those girls that are really nice.
If she ever hears us, she kens who she is. she's a really lovely person. And it was horrible what we're like about her saying that she's a vampire. Anyway, back to Gorbals.
Oh yeah, we actually have a point to this podcast. Yeah, so the vampire was rumoured to live in Glasgow's southern necropolis. So Glasgow has four necropolis.
Batman lives in one. A vampire lives in another. If you didn't again, there's a new Batman film being filmed in Glasgow and they did a bit of the northern necropolis, was it? Or was it the south one?
Well, it's not really called, I guess it is the northern one, but it's more in the West End, I guess.
Oh, is it?
No, the East End. East End even. Well, I'm lying. People from Glasgow, do not attack me. I just don't know my East and West, okay? I didn't go to school for East and West.
I don't have a confidence.
I do have a moral compass, though, because I'm quite respectable. Yeah, but, like, the big main one was where Batman was filmed. Thank you for that. Yeah, but I love how melodramatic that name is, like City of the Dead, pretty much. Like,
is that what it's called?
Yeah, Necropolis.
Oh, is that what that means?
I think so. Like, it's Metropolis, but for dead people.
Oh, wow. Susie Dent etymology there. I did not know that. Thank you for that.
I am the Susie Dent of
Prague. That's a very good fact. Thank you. I don't know why that never clicked for me.
I could fully be lying, but I think I'm telling the truth.
I think you're right. I think
sources are believe women. Yeah, so there's north, west, east, south, but like some of them are called different names now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they're all like really Victorian era big camp graveyards with like
mansion.
Yeah, big mausoleums, full Dracula tee hee hee. But, like, I genuinely think anyone who comes to visit Glasgow genuinely go to any of these cemeteries because they are really really stunning views. The main one that Becca was talking about where Batman was being filmed, the view from the top is like a really good place for us now. Like, it's just,
I was just going to say, I've got pals in Glasgow who go and smoke there.
Yeah.
You know who you are.
Dream.
Glasgow City Councillor coming to get you.
We've just, oh my God, are we narcs now?
I don't know, we've climbed on so many
people. I'm so sorry.
The grass podcast now. We're cancelled for being grassers. Anyway, Garbles, get back on topic.
Sorry, ADHD. Yeah, so apparently, according to one of the boys that was there, the rumours started on the playground, which we're not really surprised by. But on the night of the 23rd of September in 1954, about 400 children from the neighbourhood descended upon the necropolis with like stakes and knives, and apparently one boy brought his auntie because everyone was scared of her.
Just one auntie so chaperoning 400 children who were all armed.
Just one Karen just speaking to the manager vampire. But yeah, the vampire was described as being 7 foot tall with iron teeth and blood red eyes. So he wasn't a vegetarian vampire. He did eat humans because he had red eyes, not gold eyes like Edward.
So it is a male vampire then?
Well, this is the thing. I'm saying he because a lot of people say he, and there's a graffiti of a graffito? Just say talk.
A mural.
Yeah, there's a mural of the vampire where it's a man, but like, vampire is a gender neutral term, and I've never heard any of the sources say he, they just said it.
The murals were in like kind of like a fur coat number and kind of has like,
yeah,
like kind of androgynous hair.
Like,
so
Jay,
I'm gonna,
the in betweeners,
I'm saying they,
but like, they never found anything in the graveyard except trauma, because like, so there was a nearby steelworks that had like a red glow coming from it, so they would, it would cast shadows from the trees and the graves, so everything they turned to look at was a vampire, like,
and they were all bouncing off each other. They would have been terrified.
Yeah, but like,
I'm fucking
imagine
shitting
the atmosphere. Imagine the atmosphere.
Oh, the adrenaline would have been flowing. I would have loved that when I was younger.
Yeah, Old Firm when, like, you know.
The culture.
Yeah. But like, this continued, even though they found nothing, this continued for like the next couple nights. Like, the police literally could not stop these children. Oh my God, the police being incompetent. We're shocked.
Glasgow police? No way.
Not much has changed in the past 70 years, but anyway. Yeah, eventually on the 26th of August, though, so like 3 days later, there was an article in the Sunday Mail on page 3 that just stated, vampire with iron teeth is dead. Like, this thing made, like, national news. Like, it was huge.
Like, so the papers were trying to convince, were trying to calm it down by saying that the vampire was dead.
It seems that way. I read the article. And
that's a really good idea,
more, like,
though.
Yeah, but also kind of like 1984, Big Brother, tee-hee-hees, government controlling you with the news. I like, like, lying.
We're shutting this down.
Yeah, because like, part of me is like, that's really clever, but another part of me is like, well, that's proof that the news lies to you just to calm you down. Because like, obviously the vampire, if the news person didn't believe the vampire was dead, then they literally did just lie.
They potentially put like children in harm's way if there was actually really a vampire, so not actually putting that down for any press reward or award or any of that, misleading the public.
Yeah, that's no Charles Bannerman supercaligobalistic Celticar atrocious. That's not winning no prizes, like, you know. That is actually, like, as much as I know this man, and we have, actually, we don't have beef, but like, he just was kind of annoying and old. But like, that's a good title.
When I studied journalism, like, that headline and that journalist got brought up, like, first lesson, first day, when we were writing, like, this is how you should do a headline. That's the example given for the most famous Scottish headline of all time, Supercaligobalistic.
Yeah, it's like crack.
It is a really, really good headline. as much as I hate to say.
Yeah, it's kind of cringy that he kept it up in his room for the next decade, because like when I was in school, I was like, this happened literally 10 years ago, like get over it. Oh well. Yeah, so back to the vampire. You're getting all the like inside gossip on Charles Barman.
Like so many digressions in this episode.
Yeah, so many people actually attributed the rumor of the vampire to be influenced by American comic books of the time, which did have an iron-toothed vampire, like, admittedly. And this, like, the issue they're talking about, though, was published before this.
What's the comic book called again? Tales from the Crypt, is that what it is? Yeah. They've got many moral panics under their belt, Tales from the Crypt. Like, they caused similar kind of, like, tensions and stuff amongst children in America, I'm pretty sure. Like, I think this actually led to there being, like, actual, like, filters and stuff put on comic books. Like, this actually led to legislation.
It did. No, it did lead to legislation. I will get into this because a Scotsman article actually stated that an unlikely alliance of Christians, communists, and the National Union of Teachers blamed imported American horror comic books for the mass hysteria. And I'm like, I just don't think these people should ever unite. Like, you can't be a teacher and a communist. You also can't be a Christian and a communist. Like, you know?
That's a hot take.
That's a hot take, but I think we were all thinking it and I just said it. Yeah. But it's just not part of God's plan for me. How do you feel about God?
Leo. You're getting us cancelled. I'm cutting that bit.
Anyway, this literally changed laws, and the Labour MP, and when I tell you her name, you're going to lose it. You are going to lose it. The Labour MP, Alice Cullen. I shit you not, Alice Cullen. She was a Scottish Labour Party member for Glasgow Gorbals, and she was also the first Roman Catholic female member of Parliament camp. And her name is Alice Cullen, like vampires. No, when I was reading it, I was like, that can't be true. And then I googled Alice Cullen MP and she's real. She's real. Anyway, she brought about this ban, like a legislative ban, that banned young persons from harmful publications, the Act of 1955 banning repulsive or horrible media being sold to children, i.e. American comic books. So although that could be true, it's probably more likely that it came from, the rumour of the vampire or the similarities of the vampire came from another piece of Scottish folklore, and that is Jenny Wee the Iron Teeth. Jenny with the Iron Teeth. Yes, before Becky with the good hair, there was Jenny with the Iron Teeth. Who was basically, like, fembot boogeyman. Like, she would, like, if you were, like, not in your bed at night, she would come to your... This is the thing. Scottish grannies are so evil.
Are you going to talk about the Jaggy Jersey home?
No.
Did you never get told about this? The Jenny with iron teeth, like her coming at your room at night if you misbehave and stuff like that. Yeah. When I was younger, we got told if you were being a brat or if you were misbehaving that a man would come and he would take you to the Jaggy Jersey home. That, I don't know if that's a fake thing. People comment... email us if you got told to go to the Jaggy Jersey home because it scared me shitless. And obviously, I don't know if it's you wear like jumpers with like fucking knives or glass in them, or if it's just itchy jumpers. Don't know, but it seemed grim. Like it terrified me. And that's the idea behind it, and probably the same idea, but children always get told scary shit like this, and it's so fucked up. I don't kind of think they get told stuff like this now, but...
No, my granny literally told me that there was, like, a Dalek at the top of her stairs so that if I left my bedroom at night, it would, like, get me. But then she didn't realise that I would be so traumatised by this that then when I was at her house during the day and we were downstairs, her toilet was upstairs. I would not travel upstairs to the toilet. I would get that UTI life about me. Like, I would not pee at her house for, like, a decade. Like, I feel like I was probably... I feel like I was probably, like, 11 before I went up on my own.
Like, you were scared of Daleks. Wow.
Yeah, big. Well, I wouldn't have been scared of like the old ones, but like, you know, like the like modern ones. They're
the
they
ones
can, like,
that
fly.
Hover and stuff.
Yeah, and also they took out like where the tangents on this podcast. I'm not gonna do it anymore.
Go back to Jenny with iron teeth.
Yeah, Jenny with it. Iron teeth. There's actually a really good Alexander Anderson poem, which is written in Scots, but I'm sure if you Google it, you can find like an English translation if you don't speak Scots. Basically, it's a big woman with iron teeth that bites you, eats you, drags you away if you aren't in your bed at night.
That's fucking which horrible. Is camp.
Yeah, it's camp though.
But
yeah, so she was said to roam Glasgow Green, which isn't that far from the Gorbals.
She's actually headlining Transmit.
insert like Amy McDonald joke or whatever.
Michelle McMahon.
We're gonna have to edit out the laughing. But like, this is not the first time iron teeth monsters have actually been described. Like, even Jenny with iron teeth, not the first time. So there's actually a myth about a creature called the Abanbusam, which is a vampire-like creature with iron teeth and bloodshot eyes, long legs, and feet that point in the way. And I thought the feet that point in the way is, like, cute, because it's, like, you know, like, cute GF vibes, fingers pointing together, feet in the way. Which is, when you think about it, very similar to the Gorbals vampire. Mm-hmm. And this is a myth of the Akan people of, like, Ghana and Côte d'Ivoire. But this was also a myth later found in enslaved Akan people in 18th century Jamaica. And when you think about how that came about, that's a lot of the blame of that is to do with, like, Buchanan and like the Scottish people.
Scotland's hands are very, very, very bloody in slavery. Like, her history in Jamaica is horrific.
Yeah.
Like, I think Scotland and Canada have a very good way, like, trying to like just put the blame on the English when it comes to slavery and stuff. And we
The English and the Americans.
Like, one third of the surnames in Jamaica are Scottish through rape during the slave trade. Like, that's our history. Disgusting. That's why their flag is the way that it is. It's like, it's St. Andrew, just like salt
island.
Culture there is Scottish, and it's not by choice at all.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the whole culture of Jamaica is Scottish. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying that, like, the things that are there that's relevant.
Everything that is Scottish.
Yeah, if we do decide today, we would probably have an expert on to talk about what happened in Jamaica. But it's actually really terrible. Like,
yeah.
But that does make sense that how that story would be able to travel from Jamaica back to Glasgow.
Yeah, because Scott, like, literally Buchanan Street is named after the guy that was, like, I don't know, like, the president, I guess, of Jamaica, but, like, obviously an enslaved Jamaica by the UK. He was Scottish. Like, what's his name? What's his first name? Something Buchanan. But that's another point to bring up. Like, a lot of Scottish street names still celebrate these people, which they probably should not. Actually, not probably. They definitely should not.
The fact that, like, Nelson Mandela is, like, is it Nelson Mandela Street or Road? It's just next
Nelson
to
Nelson Mandela Place.
Nelson Mandela Place is, like, right off Buchanan Street. Like, where's the self-awareness, Glasgow City Council? Yeah, where is, like, the self-awareness?
Yeah, I feel like we all need to, like, Scottish people have this thing where it's, like, I don't actively think racistly, so nothing about this country is racist, which is not true.
This country is very racist, very bigoted, very sectarian.
Yeah.
The there is actually a change.org petition to change this. You've probably seen it last year during a lot of the Black Lives Matter protesting. It needs 30,000 signatures. There's about 2,700 signatures to change the street names in Glasgow. Probably here, look at the street names in Edinburgh as well. There's probably a few. There's probably buildings as well.
Literally, that are named in Scotland.
Yeah, named after slavers or stuff to do with the slave trade. So take a look at that. If you Google a Glasgow street name petition, it'll come up and you can sign it.
Not that change.org really is on seriously, but it's something.
Yeah, it's literally the bare minimum in terms of reparations, but
yeah,
it would be a move in the right direction rather than not doing anything. Like, fuck the statues, fuck the street names.
Yeah. Anyway, well, we got into it there for a second, girlies, but
it needs to be said.
Someone had to say it. So Scotland contributing in large to, slavery in Jamaica could have actually led to this route of this mythology actually coming back to Scotland. So all the Labour MPs blaming America on that, it's like, maybe look inwards at Westminster. Like, oh my God, Westminster being the problem, we are shocked again.
Yeah. It's the American comics problems. Like, that, know that these children were like living in poverty and were really fucking bored and had nothing to do. So they created their own.
Literally.
Their own, like, either they've created like an imaginary myth that they've come up with on their own, or a piece of folklore for a country that we enslaved has ended up back here and has scared people shitless and then created a moral panic. But, like, we'll blame comic books and we'll blame America. We will only blame ourselves.
Yeah. It's really sweeping things under your rug.
Whatever.
Yeah. Because, like, 400 children would not have found out about that so fast from one playground conversation had there not been such overcrowding problems in the Gorbals. Yes, you're right with that. Like, it's just... Yeah, enough said. Like, that's on there. And then back to the point at hand, though, being vampires with iron teeth or monsters with iron teeth. Like, it's also just a very instinctive thing. Like, it's just a very, like, it comes up literally in the Bible.
What? Like, vampires with iron teeth?
No, well, there's a monster with iron teeth, but, like, in Daniel 7:7, the fourth beast is said to be a dreadful, extremely strong monster with iron teeth.
Oh, wow.
So the Christians and the Labour Party both all pointing fingers to America here, but, like, point those fingers back. Like, the call is coming from inside the house. Like, what if it was you?
There's loads of stuff in media and that have, like, iron teeth that are just so scary. That there's the guy in the old James Bond films, Jaws, he has a big set of, like, steel or iron teeth. It was one of the old camp James Bond films, but, like, he was scary. Like, that imagery, somebody had metal teeth. The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker.
So that's all I had to say on the Gorbals vampire. Again, I don't really know whether or not it's real, but we could do a little Instagram live or a little moment in the Southside Necropolis if it's still there. I'm pretty sure it's still there because you can't move a cemetery, surely. So it must still be there. I just have never been.
The whole thing about, like, where it's came from and stuff like that's really interesting. I genuinely believe it probably came to Jamaica, and even if it is came for that comic book, then where did that comic book get that idea? Like, it seems like it's either way, it's came to that PC mythology for that certain
group. Well, genuinely, because, like, red eyes, iron teeth, tall.
Yeah.
Like, it's all
stuff.
That
was really good, though, Liam. I can't more than I thought of it.
I know, am I a journalist now?
Yes.
Did I serve?
Yes. Yes, that's, you got a diploma, babe. Well done.
So, my sources, I just need to say them before I forget to do it. So not Tumblr this time, guys. Who else here was shocked? Me too.
I missed it.
So there was I actually did use a blog, though. So David Castle and Serpent's Pen blog. It actually, like, looks like a very well-run mythology blog, but maybe don't go always there because they might run us out of business. So, but yeah, he wrote the article in a really fun way. It was an enjoyable read. Also, a Scotsman article by Chris McCall. I got all of my information. Well, not all of my information. I got a lot of information about the Gorbals. I also watched a YouTube documentary. I can't remember what it's called because I forgot to write it down. But there's, if you just type in Glasgow Gorbals history, there's a really good like half hour long YouTube documentary on the Gorbals, and it's really interesting to see how it I think it was called The Gorbals Rise and Fall, because it was literally about how it became so overcrowded, turned to tenements, and then they came down. I also read an article called Hunt for the Gorbals Vampire by Jonathan Brocklebank. But anyway, my whole takeaway from this is that vampire is a gender neutral term, and justice for Jenny, hashtag justice for Jenny, Jenny with the iron teeth, because I feel like she doesn't get enough credit for who she was.
I saw like a bit of the scaring that she did. Never about why she was there.
Never about the friends she made along the way. You know?
That's the second time we've done that. You did that in the first episode as well.
Yeah, and I'll do it again.
And I'll do it again.
But yeah. No, I think we should have like an origin story on her. Like, yeah. I think Hollywood, if you're listening, which you are, because who isn't listening to this podcast, definitely make a film about her, because, like, if you can do the Candyman, like, 20 times, you can do this once, you know?
It would be good to see, like, in a film, like, all the children, like, banding together night on night to try and fight a vampire, like, wee Ouija burns. That would be quite cool.
Oh, that would be a cute little friendship movie, but I also would like one where the vampire's real.
Yeah.
And eat someone.
Right, that's us. So, if you have any information on anything that we've spoke about, you can email us at thecreepybeepodcast@gmail.com. Maybe add like something in the title, like story or like listener mail or something like that, so I can actually separate it for all the bills that I pay to run this podcast. And follow us on Twitter at the Creepy Wee Pod, and follow us on Instagram at the Creepy Wee Podcast. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.